Oh, well, like if you turned on a heater, which I guess you don't have to worry about in the in LA, but if you turn on your heater, wouldn't the heat have trouble like getting to all corners of your household if there's
It's
this
not
big
as
opening in the middle?
efficient. I guess with
Like,
central
yeah,
heat, it's not as
I
big of
feel
a
like it
deal,
wouldn't be
but
as efficient.
you don't get the
I have central
efficiency
heat.
of, yeah.
Central heat and it
Oh, okay.
closes, and their doors. Unfortunately, they're like, you know, I have single pane windows. At some point, when I get some money, serious money, I'm thinking about upgrading all the windows to vinyl double pane.
Yeah.
Did you buy?
Yes,
Oh, cool.
my father-in-law and I
It's a group
he put
effort.
the money in. I put my name on it.
That's awesome.
Happens to Roger a lot.
Yeah. So I'm
I think
responsible.
me and my husband will probably have to do that too.
It's
I don't think we'll be able to afford a down payment on a house.
not ridiculous.
It sucks, really, honestly. It
Yeah.
shouldn't be that way, but it is. But it's also cyclical. I mean,
Yeah.
it's but we also moved. I mean, we could not afford to live in the Bay Area, like in a house, so we just had to move.
Yeah, it's crazy up here.
As much as I like the Bay Area, it's just the costs. Like, you know, when you wake up one day and it's like, holy shit, I will never, oh, holy moly, I'll never be able to live in this area. Because you just like you see all the flyers, you see the open houses, and you check, you
Yeah.
poke your nose into it, and it's like, what? You want how much for this? It's like a 1,700 square foot, you know, box, and they want like a million plus. Like,
Yeah. Now, there's neighborhoods like that here. The difference is there are more neighborhoods there here, so it's easier to find a decent place where it isn't like that yet.
Yeah.
And I lucked out. I mean,
Yeah, you did.
Glendale is a really good city. Some people don't like it. It goes back for historical and social reasons. But yeah, it's right next to Burbank and pretty
Beautiful
convenient.
downtown Burbank.
You know,
Are you
sometimes.
sad that the Tonight Show isn't there anymore? You like could have been living right near the Tonight Show
Yeah,
until
but you know
Jimmy
what? I
Fallon
don't think
came
I
on.
would have ever been able to make it out there. So it would have been a nice, you know, thing to drop on people, but it's not like, yeah, I go there, you get free tickets every other
Me
month.
and Jimmy Fallon are like bros.
I have a picture of Serafina and Jimmy Fallon when he was at
From
CES.
CES. Yeah. I
Name
declined the
dropper.
picture with him.
There's a Jimmy Fallon one for you. No, actually, I like this area. It's very convenient if you have a car. That's the big one.
Well, and
And
that's LA for you.
yeah.
Do you
But you,
have any of the metro train lines near you yet?
yeah, we have one of the express ones.
Oh, okay.
But it's a diesel electric one, so it's whatever is that the yellow line or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make a difference,
I don't
honestly.
know where it stops off though.
They all go downtown.
I don't know where the station where you would catch it in
Where
Glendale
the
is.
station is closest to you.
Because I when I'm at Home Depot or when I'm at the 99-cent store, I see it roll by like at, you know, when
Uh-huh.
they go ding 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 ding. Also rolls by the Gentlemen's Club, which I haven't visited yet.
Are you planning to?
Don't know. I thought about it. I don't know why. I always like to get a lay of the land.
Family show, Roger. Family show. I keep trying to remind you that. You, the one with a family.
My family's not offended, Tom.
Listen, I have a family, and I can tell you.
You're no family. He was my friend. No, what's really cool, I think, is that they're kids. It's so weird being in San Francisco because it's kind of like the pod people. You see babies and you see toddlers, but very rarely see kids.
Yeah.
Now, where I used to live, I was really close by a school, so of course you would see kids, but not like in stores or like, you know, anywhere else outside. They're just odd. Like an entire generation of people have been moved out.
Don't know. I saw lots of 20-somethings all over the place. Kids!
Kids. You and your, wait, what are the cool brand of sunglasses now? It's not Ray-Ban, it's
Oh, I was gonna say Ray-Bans. It's not
Oh
Ray-Bans.
no, no, I know what you're talking about. Warby Parker.
Yeah, with your
Oh
Warby
yeah.
Parker glasses, your fedoras slash berets slash what's another hipster hat?
Those knit hats.
The knit hats.
Tooks. All right, I'm going to start our video. Got about 10 minutes, so I'll just get
rolling. Your shiny pants, your drip coffee. Why don't you just drip it at home?
Wait, drip coffee is hipster?
Yeah.
Why is drip coffee? Drip coffee is like the most traditional, old-fashioned.
That's
what you get at Dunkin' Donuts is drip coffee.
I know.
Are you saying calling it drip coffee instead of just coffee is what's hipster?
Well, maybe, probably. You know, it's technically drip coffee, except that it's not from a machine so much as you put it, and then you take a vessel of hot water and you pour it in and let it drip out. And then charged $8.
Because I would
This is a really funny story that somebody just linked me. Hackers won't stop hijacking local U.S. radio stations to play F. Donald Trump rap.
That's because they hadn't patched their software.
Yeah. This is an illegal use of ham radio. Tampering with software it uses for its FM transmissions. And it's a simple MP3 clip that they play repeatedly. That's so funny.
Amazon had good earnings. That means I have to write them up now.
I'm sorry.
Earnings? What are you talking about?
Can you... here, I'm going to put this in the Slack. Can you append this to the end, Roger?
Yes, I will append it like an X. Wait a minute. Where is it? There. Wait, is that it? There it is.
Amazon's quarterly revenue rose 22.4%.
Dang.
Normally I don't include the Amazon stuff because it's really not, they don't, their margins are so thin, you know, there's usually not a lot to say, but that's pretty significant.
And they went on that Oprah diet.
And Amazon Web Services jumped 47%, although missed the estimate. Wow. 2016 was its best ever shopping season.
Yeah. Jeez.
I guess so.
You know, I'm going to buy a video card before something happens and electronics suddenly get super expensive.
Do you think electronics are going to get really expensive this year?
Not for any normal reason.
Roger's just being careful.
I'm just leaving it at that. Just leaving it at that.
I got you. I got that. Well, you know how I feel. You follow my Facebook.
Yeah.
Net income rose $749 million, $1.54 per share. Up from $1 per share. So they made the earnings too.
Wow.
They didn't just make the revs. Usually that's the thing, is their earnings are really low because they have such rare margins. And these aren't ridiculously huge, but they're still up. All right, news. You can just stop breaking now, okay? We're about to do the show. It's so funny, though, when these earnings reports come up, because I see that and I'm like, oh my gosh, they had a crazy quarter. Which they did. But then the fortune story is Amazon holiday sales not prime enough. And it's because they missed the estimate. Analysts had expected more. That's like they had a huge jump, but analysts thought the jump would be even bigger. I don't know that the stock market has ridiculous expectations. A lot of times people beat the expectations. It's a matter of the analyst saying, based on what we know, we think this company should make this much. Like they've been doing this X, Y, and Z. And so I think it's fair. I think sometimes we just want to give a knee-jerk response and say, oh, well, they missed the analyst expectations. The expectations were too high. They made a profit. And it's like, well, yeah, but if they didn't make the profit you think they should, that means that something is wrong, possibly, too. So if you don't believe the estimates, that's one thing. But if the estimates are reasonable and the company misses them, that's an important measurement, right? The Daily Tech Profits Show.
The Daily Oracle.
Okay, what website keeps talking to me? No, it's that one.
What is it saying?
Automatic audio. That's so annoying. I have an extremely clicky keyboard, so I can't type too much while I'm on.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I'm also just an extremely loud typer.
I am too. I bang on my keyboard so bad.
I'm going to put in one of those old IBM PS2 keyboards. So make it
extra loud. The switch keys?
Yeah. What are they? M50? Is that? I always forget.
It used to be you just buy the Northgate. The Northgate made a bunch of switch.
No, I'm talking about the IBM ones, like the OG ones.
The OG ones from
those are super OG.
Yeah.
Like the original AT or the original XT keyboard?
No, the IBM PS2 one is the one I'm thinking of.
That's not OG.
Model
that's
M, just a, Beef says.
It's just an Elder G, an EG.
Okay. Are we on AGR? Yeah, I have a typewriter right there. I'll just start using that.
I've never used a typewriter.
Oh, wow.
Man, you are missing out on life.
I used a typewriter in college, okay?
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
I also had an IBM PS2. That's where I had got that keyboard the first time.
Oh, wow.
But I needed to have nicely typed papers, and all you could do was dot matrix print. Unless you got on the Max, which had the laser printer, but those were hard to get in the computer labs.
Right.
So I had a typewriter. It was a word processing typewriter that could store whole papers, but you couldn't see the paper all at once. It would only show you one line of text at a time.
Oh, I remember this. LCD screen. Oh.
Wish I still had.
I remember that. I remember using my dad's old typewriters. And this is, I've never used an electric typewriter. I went from like the old mechanical type to like a computer. But I used to get the, like when I got on a good rhythm, I would always get the key, not the keys, but the actual letters stuck together. You know, when you type too fast sometimes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Pain of the patukas.
I always had computers growing up, so I never used a typewriter. My dad built computers when I was really small. Like, he had one in my nursery.
I
was sharing the room with a nursery.
I always have to be careful telling this story, or I'll say something unintentionally hilarious. But I remember the first computer I ever saw in person was the Wang computer. That's the part that can get me in trouble. That was at Pet Milk in Greenville. And my dad took me in to see it after it got installed.
That's cool.
Yeah.
When was that?
78.
Oh, okay.
Probably. Yeah, it was a
bunch of youngins.
I just remember looking at it and going, wait, that's all it is? Like, I expected it to have all the flashing lights from television and stuff.
Like from Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
I was expecting the voice. I wanted a voice.
Yeah, yeah.
They used to sell for like the ColecoVision and some other computers, I think the old Texas Instrument. They had a voice box, so it could sort of make something that approached human speech. It was like, okay, I guess that's speech.
But, is my mic echoey?
Yeah. Tap all in. I know is how quickly everyone's...
Yeah, we hear you tapping, so...
Okay.
How just, used to everything people have gotten.
Hmm?
I'm amazed at how quickly everyone got used to how... amazing computers have gotten. Now it's a normal thing.
Oh, yeah.
Having a computer talk to you was like Star Trek. Like, whoa, that could never happen. Now it happens.
All right. We are ready to roll. You guys ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Here we go.
This show is brought to you by audience members like me, not outside organizations. To find out more, go to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for, I don't know, Thursday, February 2nd, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today, Shannon Morse in the house. Good to have you alongside, Shannon.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's super exciting to be here.
I haven't seen you since CES. Everything okay?
Yeah, things are all right. Technical glitches like all this week, so that's kind of irritating. But
you made it out of Las Vegas alive. That's good.
I made it a little sick, but I made it out.
Of course, if people aren't aware, Shannon, the co-host of Tech Thing, Hack 5, all kinds of good stuff over there at hak5.org. We're going to talk today about shimmers. These are not the things you get when you've taken an illegal substance. These are something that is replacing skimmers. You've probably heard of ATM skimmers. Those are the things that they place over the card slot so that they can skim your magnetic stripe. There's a new thing for chip cards, and Shannon's going to help us understand what they do and what the actual risks are.
Right.
So, before we get into that, Mozilla laid about 50 people off Thursday, ending its efforts to bring Firefox to connected devices. They're going to focus more on emerging technology, so backing off of Firefox OS for good. They'd kind of backed off of it most of the way already, and a lot of Internet of Things devices is kind of pushed down the road. They're looking at things like voice services, like an Amazon voice services competitor, so there could be some interesting stuff, but it is a retrenchment for Mozilla.
I'm not really surprised at that at all. I haven't heard much about Mozilla on connected devices in a long time, so this is no surprise to me.
Yeah. Now, here are some more top stories. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman and Ian King have sources who say Apple is developing an ARM chip to handle low-power functions on future laptops. The chip, which is being referred to as the T310, reportedly went into development last year and is similar to the T1, which is the processor that Apple designed for MacBook Pro's Touch Bar. It's the one that only powers the Touch Bar on the new MacBook Pro. Now, unlike that one, the T310, this new one, would have access to other system resources like storage and networking. So the power nap function on OS X would be operated by it, saving a little bit of power, taking a little bit of load off the Intel chip. It may show up in upgraded MacBook Pros that are expected later this year. All of this just based on Gurman and King's sources, but Gurman has a great track record on this stuff. Do you like the idea of a separate chip handling your sleep function, Shannon?
I'm not sure that we need one necessarily.
Would save you on battery life.
It could if you're worried about that. But don't they have good battery life as it is?
The new MacBook Pros actually have controversial battery life. It kind of depends on the day. And I've noticed this with mine. Sometimes its battery life is just fine. And other times I'm like, whoa, I'm down to 30% already.
What I do and just stick with Linux. It seems to work out pretty well for me.
There you go. The solution to all Mac problems. Switch to Linux. Says Shannon. The US FCC will vote on February 23rd on initial approval for voluntary adoption. This is the earliest stage of a new television broadcast standard in the US called ATSC 3.0. We've mentioned it before on the show. ATSC 3 allows, first of all, the big one, 4K TV broadcasts. So if you're the person with a 4K TV, ultra high def, you want to get these broadcasts, you would be able to get them under this standard. It can also do geolocation of broadcast signals and some interactivity. There's some really nifty stuff they can do with that. It could wake up receivers for emergency alerts. It can even target those alerts street by street. So let's say there's flooding in a particular portion of a city. It could alert those parts of the city, like, by waking up their receivers and saying, hey, you know, emergency, you need to pay attention, or a tornado warning. It also allows for better audience measurement, can support more encryption and access restrictions, which means DRM on your broadcast signals. There's limited DRM on ATSC 1 right now, but it's pretty ineffective. This would be more along the lines of what you get from a cable signal. ATSC 3 is not supported by most existing equipment, however, so the FCC will require ATSC 1 signals to continue for the time being while ATSC 3 is rolled out. South Korea adopted ATSC 3 in 2016. This is not a full adoption by the U.S., but what do you think, Shannon? On the one hand, hey, 4K broadcast free over the air. On the other hand, oh, wait, they're not free because they have to pay to decrypt them.
Yeah, 4K broadcast is awesome. It's, they're future-proofing. That's what's going on right now. And I think that it, we're seeing that across the an entire entertainment spectrum right now with TVs, with set-top boxes, with HDMI itself, and now with ATSC. So this isn't a surprise. The DRM thing kind of stinks, though. I'm kind of bummed about that.
And it's one of those things where I don't want to object to improving standards just because there's DRM. I mean, yeah, there are all kinds of good things that are being developed that allow for DRM because they're digital. And that's what this is. This is upgrading from, you know, the broadcast standard of the 90s to something that is digital and can do all the cool things that digital can. But with digital comes the ability to lock things down. And
yeah,
unfortunately, there's just no getting around that. You have to take one to get the other.
The emergency alerts thing is really cool. I recently did read an article regarding SMS emergency alerts, the kind that just pop up on your phone and make it beep several times. And they were talking about standardizing it so it would be much more localized, like street level, as they are talking about with ATSC. Yeah. And they discussed how that would work a lot better because people are more likely to pay attention to it if it's localized as they would more so than they would if it was across an entire county or an entire city, because if you get too many, you're less likely to, or you're more likely to ignore them.
Yeah. The other thing you could do is more easily add a TV tuner to a phone because of the way this works. It can fit right in and you could get broadcasts to your phone that don't use your bandwidth because they're just coming in over ATSC, and the interactivity could happen because you send your responses out over the internet connection on your phone and then receive the data through the broadcast channel because these are data rich signals.
It's exciting.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Google is ending something for what a surprise. This is a test, though, that they were doing in the San Francisco area of hands-free payment systems. So as of February 8th, if you've been using hands-free on Google, you won't be able to anymore. So you need to cash out, get your gift certificate. I think they're offering a Whole Foods gift certificate to people who tested it. The feature, which launched last March, used location services. So Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, your GPS to determine if you were inside a store. And then you could come up to the cashier. The cashier would ask for your initials, verify a picture of you from the system to make sure it's you, and then you didn't need to take your phone out to make the purchase. If you recall, Square did this exact very similar thing where they were using geofencing, and I loved that. There was a coffee shop in Petaluma I used to go to where I could just walk in, and they already knew me, so they would look and they would see the picture, and I never had to pull anything out. I never had to do anything. Despite the shutdown, Google says it's now working to bring the best of the hands-free technology to even more people in stores. They sort of obliquely recommend everybody sign up for Android Pay, which could be just that they want everyone always to sign up for Android Pay because they run it. But it sort of indicated that maybe they'll be bringing some of this technology to the wider Android Pay system.
I never used this once when it was available. At all.
Did you ever use the Square one back in the day?
No, I never did. I was always going for credit cards. And the reason why is because I would get rewards by paying with my, you know, regular credit cards with a swipe transaction. So for using these hands-free ones, I just never go for them.
Well, you tie it to a credit card. So I assume you could still get your points.
Maybe.
But
I don't know.
The thing about it is it sounds horribly insecure, right? Anybody could just walk up.
It does sound horribly insecure.
And in busier locations, it might be. But it's actually quite difficult. It's a social engineering challenge, not a technical challenge, to say, I want to get them to think I'm that person, right?
Right.
And so you'd have to talk them into like, oh, I know it doesn't look like me, but that's me. And then if it's a small enough store, you might overhear that and go, wait a minute, what are they talking about? So, you know, there are those kinds of challenges, but I mean, I don't know, Shannon, that doesn't sound like that much more of a challenge than your typical scams that are run with payment systems of any kind.
That's true. And I wonder if there was any kind of man in the middle attack created to implement a new photo when it came over.
Right, like, and if there was sniff out a connection, that would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it would be encrypted. I haven't studied it myself, but I would hope that it would be secure.
Yeah, totally. It absolutely has to be. AT&T announced it will roll out 5G service in Austin, Texas, and San Francisco, California later this year with promised speeds of 400 megabits per second. So this isn't up to the true 5G spec. This always happens. We always have something that come out and we're like, well, it's not really LTE advanced, but it's technically LTE. This one will be the same way. However, AT&T says it should be able to hit the gigabit per second speed that true 5G should get by the end of the year. These are some pretty big promises, not only to have service, but to have it hit a gig by the end of the year. AT&T also announced it will start testing AirGig. That's a service they're developing that uses power lines to transmit data wirelessly at gigabit speeds. And that could be used in your house as well.
That's so fast. I'm so excited for this.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I don't use AT&T, of course. I hope that it rolls out to other carriers soon. I believe Verizon is also looking into it. But
yes, they are.
Oh man, can we make this happen like immediately?
This is why AT&T is making a big deal about this. They want people to think, oh, if I want to get that gigabit wireless speed, I got to get on AT&T. Fact of the matter is, eventually it'll come to all of them, as did LTE. It is always that horrible overlap time, though, where you're looking at your friend in Austin who has AT&T, and you're like, you get 400 megabits per second right now over the air. I'm so jealous of you. But Verizon's rolling it out. T-Mobile and Sprint also have plans here in the United States. I'm not sure what the 5G plans are in Europe. I know in South Korea and Japan, though, carriers are running tests for 5G service there. So this is a lot faster than I thought we'd see any kind of even test market version of this. When AT&T said they were doing tests with Intel in Austin this summer, I did not expect them to announce regular service rolling out.
I'm just excited about it. And I'm not too surprised that they're already trying to get gung-ho about it, too, because, you know, there's so much more data that's being transferred simply just by us watching shows and things like that on YouTube and Netflix. So this is good. It's a good way for us to start implementing these.
Now you got to start looking for the hardware that can support this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing that this puts me in mind of is, do you think that we are getting to a point where wireless service in the next couple of years maybe will eclipse wired service in its speed delivery? Because in Austin, there are gigabit providers. There are multiple gigabit providers. In San Francisco, there aren't. So if you can get gigabit service by the end of the year from AT&T over the air, and you can't get a wired service that can give you gigabit, suddenly we're living in an entirely different world.
What? No, this blows my mind. Right? Well, as I'm kind of a gamer at home whenever I actually have time to play games, and you never play on wireless because wireless sneaks. So the idea that I would be able to play games on a better connection on wireless kind of astounds me. But maybe that's just because I'm old.
It is. I think it's still astounding, even if you're young. Young people, write in and let us know. Feedback at DailyTechNewsShow.com. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman filed a lawsuit in the state Supreme Court in Manhattan accusing Charter's Spectrum ISP, which is formerly Time Warner Cable in New York, of promising faster internet speeds than it could deliver. This is the classic, I paid for 300 megabits per second and I only ever get 80 megabits per second. State conducted a 16-month investigation of internal corporate communications and customer speed tests. The suit alleges that subscribers to the 100 to 300 megabit per second plans only received speeds up to 70% slower quite often than was promised, and more than 80% slower on Wi-Fi, which to my mind, that's because Wi-Fi is always a little slower. Charter says the issue in the suit all refer to Time Warner Cable before Charter acquired it, and that since Charter acquired Time Warner Cable, it has made significant upgrades. The lawsuit, however, says that the relevant period of the acquisition runs from January 1st, 2012 to the present, of the accusations, I should say, runs from January 1st, 2012 to the present. So that would cover the period after Charter acquired Time Warner Cable, which was back on May 18th of last year. Among the allegations are the renting of 900,000 older modems not capable of advertised speeds that Time Warner Cable promised the FCC it would replace in July 2013, but New York says it did not. Now, there is a big old mountain of FUD here. There are people on the ISP side of this who are going to say, well, hold on. There are a million reasons why someone might not get their advertised speed. It could be because on a node, there are a lot of people using it at once in the evening, and generally they get the speed they want, but they only wanted to use it. They happened to want to use it at the time when the node got crowded, to which New York is saying, well, you shouldn't have oversold it. And the ISP says, we didn't oversell it. That's just the conditions of a cable node. There's also things that can happen with your Wi-Fi router and interference and bad routers and router management. And you can get into a big he said, she said about whose fault those sorts of things are.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think we know this from a consumer's perspective. Every time you have any kind of issue with your connection, it's what's the problem? Is it your modem, your Wi-Fi router? Is it a cable splitter? Is it the connection outside of your house in your neighborhood? You never really know. And it's such a huge headache. But I would assume that enough people have complained about this issue that they kind of know that it's the ISP's problem, not the consumer.
Right. And I'm not saying all of those things to exonerate Time Warner Cable or Charter, because I think there also are things going on where maybe they didn't intentionally underserve, but possibly just didn't prioritize tracking down problems that they could have solved.
But it might explain why it took so long for them to get to this stage in this investigation. I mean, 16 months, that's quite a long time. And this has been going on since, from January 1st, 2012? That's a long time.
And I guess what I'm worried about is it's going to be very difficult for a court to have the competency to sort through what are the reasonable things that you can expect. Like, you know what? Sometimes your connection is just going to be slow and it's nobody's fault. That's just the way the internet works. And what are the things that you can identify and say, well, this is starting to feel like negligence. This is starting to feel like you didn't upgrade your machines. And those 900,000 older modems, now maybe there's another side to that story, but that's the kind of thing that sounds like you can point to and say, hold on, you had a bunch of people whose modems couldn't get the
speeds. You knew this was the problem?
They were
what
subscribing
the heck?
To. Yeah. Exactly. a couple more things here. Blue Phase Liquid Crystal is something that you might want to try to remember in your head. Blue Phase Liquid Crystal is a technology that can be used to eliminate the need for color filters in LCD screens. The color filters are the things that change it to red, green, etc., and create the colors on the fly. If you don't have to have those color filters moving around, that allows for higher resolution screens and more vivid colors, and possibly a little power savings. Samsung demonstrated Blue Phase Liquid Crystals back in 2008, but the problem has been a high operation voltage. So even though it might take less power on its own, you needed so much voltage to get it working that it wasn't production ready. However, a report in the journal Optical Materials Express describes research that combined Blue Phase Liquid Crystal with a performance-enhancing electrode structure that allows for light transmittance of 74%, that's pretty bright, with operation voltage of 15 volts per pixel, which is reasonable. The next step is a working prototype. They've basically demonstrated scientifically that this can work. They now need to make an actual unit that can do it, and that's expected by next year.
I wonder if this is something that we'll see at CES next year. Wouldn't that be interesting?
If they're able to make a prototype, I would not doubt that somebody will have this on display at CES next year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's make a note of that. Try to remember to look for Blue Phase Liquid Crystal. And the next time you see Robert Herron, see what he knows about this, because I know he's up on that stuff.
Yeah, I'll ask him about it.
Yeah. Finally, Reuters reports Amazon says net sales rose to $43.74 billion in the fourth quarter from $35.75 billion a year earlier. However, as good as that is, analysts had expected $44.68 billion. Amazon's net income rose to $749 million. That's $1.54 per share from $482 million, just about $1 per share last year. Amazon's quarterly revenue rose 22.4%, driven by strong sales in the holiday period and a jump in subscriptions for Amazon Prime. Revenue from Amazon Web Services rose 47% to $3.54 billion. However, that's still under what the analysts expected. They thought they were going to see $3.60 billion. The 2016 holiday was Amazon's best ever shopping season, and it shipped 50% more items than the prior year for third-party vendors.
Wow, that's huge. That's a big number.
Yeah. And as Big Jim, patron of the show and host of Tech and Trade, logistics guy, says, with that revenue, they can pay for all those airplanes and that air hub that they're building out there in Kentucky. And that's what Amazon does. They take their money and they plow it back into the company.
That's awesome. Good for them.
To get all the tech headlines each day in less than 10 minutes, folks, go subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. Your patron dollars support that as well. All right, let's talk about shimmers. These are thin chips. They're easily inserted into an ATM slot or a point of sale card reader. And the old way used to be like pull on it to see if there's something loose, to see if there's a skimmer attached. These you won't be able to tell. It'll be almost impossible to know that they're there without opening up the machine. They sit between the card's chip and the chip reader. And what they can do is use intercepted data to replicate the magnetic stripe version of the card. So first of all, if everybody were on chips, these shimmers wouldn't be very useful. The other thing that happens is, even if you're using a magnetic card, there should be something called an ICVV. An ICVV is an integrated circuit card verification value. The CVV is that code on the back of your plastic card. The ICVV is something that's generated by the chip and authorizes the transaction. Some banks aren't checking that. If they're not checking that, this exploit can work because it won't be foiled by this incremental ICVV. So Shannon, first of all, do I have that about right? And second of all, how big of a risk is this? What should I be on the lookout for?
That was a really good explanation, actually. So good job on that. For anybody that doesn't know, I used to work with a credit card processor. And one of the things I had to educate myself to get the job on was about fraud in credit card industry. And while when I worked there, we were mostly focusing on magnetic stripes and how we needed to update the credit card processing units to accept magnetic stripe cards with pins and things like that, instead of just not at all. The problem with chips, the chip cards, which are called EMV, I believe.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, Europay, MasterCard, and Visa, or something like that. Those ones were up and coming at the time. So it was something that we had to start looking into as well, because we would have to upgrade all the machines. Shimmers are a really big deal because, unfortunately, there's not a really good way to tell if an ATM that you're using at the time has one of these shimmers installed. And there's also not a good way to tell if the bank that issued your credit card in the first place is actually checking for that ICVV whenever you put your card into an ATM, because it all happens on the back end. It's something that's non-consumer side facing. So as long as all that's happening, then you're good and you won't have to worry about this fraud. But if it's not, then your card could easily get duplicated as a magnetic stripe card, which plenty of, you know, merchants in the US are still using, and we use online, and you can easily get money stolen out of your account for your credit card in the blink of an eye. Of course, you won't be held liable for that. The merchant would, or the credit card bank issuer would, but it's still something to worry about because it adds stress to your life, and then you have to change your credit card numbers.
Yeah, and the association goes to great pains to point out that this is not a problem with the chip technology.
Right.
The chip technology has a safeguard put against this. It's called ICVV. And the problem is if the bank itself is not checking that when it implemented its authentication system. Now, you might be able to look this up and find out if your bank does it, or write, you know, to find out if your bank does it, if you really need to worry. Even if your card were to hit a shimmer, these things aren't all over the place. It would be pretty rare that you would run into them. And like Shannon said, you're not going to be liable for it. The bank, because it wasn't checking that number, is going to be liable for it. But nobody wants to think they even want to get hit by lightning, right? We all want to stay away from metal, even though it's pretty rare. So what are some of the things we can do to guard against this, especially since it's something you can't really see, obviously?
Yeah, it's really hard to see. So obviously, they would still need some kind of PIN. So cover up your PIN whenever you're typing it into an ATM machine, because if they do have a camera installed, then they'd be golden. you know, you'd be kind of screwed in that case. If you are intending to use an ATM machine whenever you're out and about, use one that's installed at a bank, because those are covered with cameras on all sides and they're much more secure than ones that are just standalone. Also, standalone ones are really easy to hack because a lot of times they aren't installed into like a concrete siding of a building or something like that. You can easily get around the backside of them and install a man in the middle attack. I've seen plenty of this happen through, you know, InfoSec talks at conventions that I've been to. They've found weird wireless dongles plugged into the back of these things and stuff like that. So steer clear of those. And if you ever plug your card into an ATM machine and it gets stuck on the inside, or it feels like it's not a smooth transaction of pulling it in and out, that could mean that there's a shimmer inside of it. So if you do feel like that's a little sketchy, then let the authorities know or let the bank know, because it might entail that there's actually a shimmer in there. Any kind of dodgy ATMs like that are in alleyways and stuff like that, protect yourself from those, obviously.
On the back of a truck. Yeah.
Yeah, don't use those. Convenience store ATMs, those aren't necessarily the best ones to use. I try to avoid those at all costs. So definitely go to a bank as opposed to one of those.
Yeah, Brian Krebs at Krebs on Security had an article about this a little while back on January 19th. And one of the things he mentioned, which I hadn't thought of, is avoid withdrawing cash on the weekend. He said it's more likely that the folks who want to install these shimmers will do it on like a Friday night, because they know that even places that check regularly for them probably aren't going to check until Monday. And more people on the weekends need cash because they're going out for the weekend.
Yeah, that's true. And this also brings up a question for me, too, is when are we going to see this fixed? Because, you know, these banks obviously are going to be held liable, but this has been going on since 2015 with these shimmers for chip cards. And since the U.S. currently is not asking for, whenever you do a transaction, chip and PIN, right now I haven't hit any merchants that have actually asked me for a PIN on my chip card. You just run the chip and then you're fine.
Yeah.
So it's still really easy to duplicate and turn and get a magnetic stripe card number to run on online or whatever a thief wants to use. So when are we going to see this fixed? It's getting to the point where it's starting to irritate me that these issues are happening when it's an easy fix. It seems like it would just be a firmware update or something like that.
Yeah. Well, the banks, first of all, need to make sure that they're all checking the ICVV.
Right.
The retailers all need to start taking chip cards, because it's the ones that take magnetic stripes still that these criminals can take advantage of. Gas stations. How many gas stations have you been in the United States that take the chip card yet?
None.
I don't think I've been in one. So suddenly you can go buy a bunch of gas at the very least. I've been in a few other places where they've got the chip slot taped over and they're like, not yet, still doing magnetic stripe. At which point those retailers are actually liable for any payments that are fraud.
Yeah, as of October 1st, 2015, they put through a law with MasterCard and Visa detailing new chip card liability claims. So if a merchant has not updated their processing so that they are using secure chip readers, then they can be held liable if there's any kind of fraud that happens on their, in their storefront. If they are using updated chip readers and they're using them correctly, then the bank is still held liable.
Yeah. And by the way, I hear you Europeans laughing at us because we've had chip and PIN forever. However, these shimmers are still showing up in Europe because they can still take the information. If the bank doesn't check the ICVV, and then they can go and use it online or replicate the card and use it in a market that still has magnetic stripes like the United States. So don't get too smug about it and do all those same things. Cover your PIN codes, et cetera, because it could happen anywhere, although it's more likely to happen here.
Yeah, it's an issue. Chances are, because it's so rare, you probably won't run into this from your own ATM usage. But, you know, maybe somebody who's watching the show has had this happen to them. But it's very rare.
I hope not.
But you should still watch out for it. Just, you know, it keeps you from dealing with the stress. But just for shimmers, make sure that you're using a decent ATM. And for skimmers themselves, just pull on it. You're not going to break an ATM by pulling on it, so don't be afraid of it.
Well, or if you do, you just find yourself a skimmer.
Exactly. If you do pull something off, It's probably a skimmer. Yeah.
How do you know? Well, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. It helps us find these great conversations. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Another Jay Martin is paying attention because he wrote, "Hello, Tom, Shannon, and Roger." He knew you were on the show. Said, "I work for an anti-spam company for many large ISPs. A few of those have enabled email delivery over IPv6. Nearly 100% of the email traffic over IPv6 is spam at this point." Whoa. So that's another reason we need to get this IPv6 switch happening, is it, we can't leave it just to the spammers. He also wrote, "I looked into switching my home network to IPv6 and I ran into several roadblocks. I purchased my own modem, which is IPv6 capable, but on the router configuration page, it says IPv4 only. I didn't realize that ISPs approve and push firmware and settings to modems, so it's up to the ISP to have your external IP be IPv6. So the person who said they couldn't figure out why their IPv6 modem wouldn't let them do IPv6, it might be because of your ISP. Also, another Jay Martin says, "My Eero router does not support IPv6 at this time," stating on their site that Eero does not yet support DHCPv6 or any IPv6 firewall. So if you're using the Eero or some of these other mesh network may have the same situation, then you're not going to be able to use IPv6 yet.
That stinks.
Yeah.
I want to use it now.
I know. And then Arthur in moderately snowy Toronto says, "Okay, I was listening to Tuesday's show and was glad to hear you help spread the word about IPv6. However, I was surprised to hear Ethan Banks suggest that IPv6 eliminates the need for NAT. In the example case where all devices in the home have a publicly routable IP, it would be true that ISPs could help identify specific bandwidth-intensive devices inside the home, but these devices exposed to the internet would also be fodder for hackers. All of the IoT devices with poor security standards would be granted instant access to the internet and the internet to them. Common IPv4 routers that are currently in use provide a type of firewall protecting all the devices on the home network from the outside world. Even in a future IPv6 world, I hope to see the homeowner or business continue using NAT routers to block unwanted incoming connections. As a related aside, I used to configure my router to pass SSH requests to a Linux machine in my house. It was always entertaining to review the access logs for the piles, daily failed dictionary attacks against the system." Well, thank you, Arthur. I think what Ethan is saying, and I've actually seen other people write this about IPv6, is we shouldn't have to rely on NAT firewalls to protect our devices. The devices should be secure.
Right, right.
That's the ideal world, is that you don't have an Internet of Things device that allows any connections except the ones that you've authorized. And we need to have that happen. And some people argue that an IPv6 world will hurry that along because the device makers can't fudge things and hope they get protected by a firewall. That said, I totally see what Arthur is saying, is great, that's a lovely idea. Until that happens, I'm definitely running a firewall to protect those devices.
Yeah, and you should, because, you know, just like you said, IoT manufacturers haven't been implementing proper security on those devices. Kind of love that Arthur is he's passing SSH requests to a Linux machine in his house. That's hilarious. I would love to see your logs.
Good. Send your logs to Shannon, Arthur, if you feel like it. So you'll get a laugh. Finally, Dan from no longer warm Michigan, I'm sorry to hear that, Dan, says, "Scott, as usual, made excellent points about automation and the rise of electronic spreadsheets creating more jobs and less drudge work for accountants. And there are several examples of this dynamic where the industry is improved by automation. Where I feel it falls down is in industries where the automation slash robots complete basically all the work. Those accountants were able to take the much more organized and granular info and better serve their clients with more informed analysis and recommendation. In the auto industry, if the robot entirely builds the car, then the car is done. That's the end. If the coal mining robot handles all the tasks relevant to getting the coal out of the ground to the surface, then that's done. If each of them then load their products onto self-driving trucks, then it's delivered. People are certainly freed up, but for what? The job is done. Those are the industries where there will be some of the strongest trauma."
Oh, that's a good point.
No, they're great points. And when we were talking on that show, when I was saying there are definitely going to be the people who don't have the replacement jobs, I think Dan's doing a good job of identifying where those trouble points are going to be. And those are the people we have to make an extra effort to work on new jobs for them if those jobs get eliminated. This is no different, you know, than people who used to do things in agriculture. Most of our jobs were agriculture for decades, and automation of agriculture eliminated so many of those jobs.
Right.
We had to figure out, okay, what do we do with those laborers, and how do we bring them into other industries and take advantage of that? That is a more difficult problem for sure.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I wish I had the answer.
Yeah. And there are lots of people working on job retraining, internship, mm-hmm. that Amazon internship, that Microsoft program we talked about, where they say, hey, we can take you from an eliminated job and get you started on another career. Those are efforts to do that. Not everybody who worked, say, you know, in an automotive job or a coal mining job wants to become a developer, though. So you need right. a lot of different options.
Good
well,
points.
Thank you, Dan, for the email. And thank you, Shannon, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me on. Yeah, anytime you want to geek out about like credit card processing, let me know.
That was great. I kind of took a shot in the dark when I sent Shannon the topic today, and she responded with like, oh yeah, no, this I've forgotten. I think maybe you told me you used to work in card processing, but I'd forgotten.
I probably did. It was my first introduction to a job that had to do with security. So for me, that was one of the first times that I was really into like, oh, hacking and privacy and security. This is kind of important. I should learn more. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah, that's great. That really is a good story. If you want to follow what Shannon's doing now, where should they go to find it?
You can find me over on Twitter. I'm at Snubs, S-N-U-B-S, not two B's, just one B. I don't know why people put two B's in there, but they do. And you can also find all of my shows over at Hack5. It's hak5.org. Our most recent ones, we've had a couple of really, really good interviews on Hack5 about, did you know that your phone can be fingerprinted with the IR transmissions?
Isn't
that weird?
So
proximity?
So everybody's
proximity
phones has
IR.
A little different IR?
It's a little bit different. Isn't that weird? It's a little creepy.
It is a little creepy, yeah.
So a great interview there. And you can also check out Tech Thing over at tekthing.com. And it's also on Hack5.
Go check it out, hak5.org. Big thanks to everybody who supports us in all the different ways at dailytechnewsshow.com/support, including Jay Dobson and all the other folks. Pushpak Ravitej, I apologize if I'm not saying your name exactly right, but just jumped in at the analyst level. We got all kinds of folks supporting us. Big thanks to every single one of them. And if you want to join them, please go to patreon.com/DTNS. If you pledge $5 a month, that's 25 cents a show. You get a weekly posting that should be emailed to you if you have your settings right, that recaps all the news of the week and has an exclusive column. Mine just went out today talking more about robots and manufacturing and why that is on the rise in manufacturing more now than ever. You can get all that at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Chris Ashley and Len Peralta. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Good show.
All right.
Perfect Brian Brushwood impersonation.
Just so lifelike. So lifelike.
I thought it was creepy.
Let me see.
Oh, I'm tired today.
ICVV. What did that? This is funny. ICVV, what you did there.
Uh-huh.
I like that.
Bankers won't change their swipes.
These are good.
Wedging a shimmer between you and your money. Then shimmer, shimmer, Cocoa Puff. Shimmer, shimmer, Cocoa Puff.
That's going to be stuck in your head now.
Dang it, you guys.
Then shimmer primer is grimier than skimmers.
Grimmer.
Primer.
Shimmer
is it
primer,
primer, or primer.
Shimmer primer is grimmer than skimmers. Well, maybe it's primer because then it would rhyme all the way through. You're right.
Yeah, that's a. Yeah. All that shimmer steals gold.
That's a good too.
Shimmers to the left, shimmers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle, man. Attack with you.
Okay, little Steeler's wheel. I like it.
Shim shim salabim.
Oh, you guys are so creative.
Yeah, this is a good day.
Let's see.
I see VV, you taking my info.
Ah, funny.
Lols.
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 Big old mountain of FUD.
Yeah.
Pete, apple arms. Like, you know,
oh, I said that, didn't I? Big old mountain of FUD.
Yeah. You get DRM? Oh, no, it's the Oprah one. The game with your shimmer. See.
1.21 gigabit.
I like the shimmer primer is grimmer than skimmers. That's
shimmer
my favorite.
Primer is grimmer than skimmers.
I like wedging a shimmer between you and your money.
I'm actually a big fan of ICVV, what you did there.
Eh? So you're the boss, man.
We can let the votes continue to come in for a little bit. I'm still leveling. With great 4K comes great DRM ability. ICV, you baby.
That's creepy.
Shimmer that.
Shimmer me timbers.
Shimmer me timbers. Is that on there or did you just make that up?
No, I made that.
That's good. I like that. Arr, shimmer me timbers. So what do you have the rest of the day, Shannon?
I need to edit Hack 5 and I need to go over some notes from a meeting I had this morning because we're going to destroy the studio later
rebuild.
This year.
It's going to be the Bionic studio.
Yeah, so I need to start doing research on what we need to replace and buy and see what our budget will allow us to get and stuff like that. So that's going to be fun.
That's part of Eileen's job.
Yay. Will she do it for me? Because this sounds really boring.
I bet she won't.
I'll pay her. Not really. In Starbucks.
There, she might, you know, you might hit her up for advice. Not even joking there. Because that's what she did at YouTube a lot. And Fandango right now is building a new studio. And she's involved in she has to give a presentation and all this stuff. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll ask her for some recommendations because I've never bought anything for the studio. So I have a big lack of education when it comes to that stuff. So yeah.
Are you looking to to buy from or are you just looking for what to buy?
I know that we're going to go for Blackmagic because we have a lot of their stuff already. So we can implement new products pretty easily because they'll all work with what we already have. But which models and stuff like that. Like, I'll need to figure that out. And what the best lighting equipment is, stuff that.
Lighting can be a mixed bag depending on what you want. If you're just doing like what you guys do, which is a stand-up, I would just say get LED floodlights.
Okay,
Those are pretty inexpensive. We have a few of those. If you want to make it a little more dramatic, you could go with spots, but spots get hot and they're really...
Oh, we don't need those. Yeah. We have flow lights, I think is what they're called right now.
KinoFlow?
I have no clue.
You know, I love KinoFlow, but they're also super pricey and they're stuck with their tubes.
Yeah.
I would recommend, these guys are low buck, but they're in the Bay Area. If you go to, how can I send you something?
Thing about KinoFlow, though, and I know they're super expensive, is they're so dead simple. Like, you just point them. And they,
Well, that's the thing with LED floods. You can do the same thing, but they offer the ability to adjust the brightness and the color depending on which. Where are you, Shannon? Are you at Shannon? Or are you Snubs on here?
Shannon at hack5.org or Snubs at hack5.org.
Oh no, I mean in the chat.
Oh, in the chat.
I think you're hack5 Snubs. No.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, I'm hack5 Snubs.
There, just send it to you.
Oh, thank you.
So these guys are down in the South Bay. This is what we used to buy for some of the stuff at Rev3 because they're super cheap. Like cheap, like, you know, not like it's like $20 or anything. But on the average, it tends to be 30 to 40% cheaper than
B&H. Oh, cool. Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Oh, time to pick the title.
I say go with what you want if you want to go ICVU.
No, I want to go ICVV, what you did there.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's winning.
It's winning.
It's winning.
Lowercase I, though, I think, is how you.
Yes, it is a lowercase.
Okay, good.
You like doing that.
Simon Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Doesn't get old.
Wow, I'm weird.
I think we're all kind of weird.
I was going to go to the gym with my friend, but she's sick.
We can go by yourself.
Nah. No way. I do not have that much motivation.
I have no motivation for that, which is why I don't join gyms. I will do a workout at home, but...
Roger would never join a gym that would take him.
No, I wouldn't. Like, oh, let me use your Nautilus machine from 1985.
Yeah, right.
When's the last time anyone cleaned this?
1985.
The worst.
Ew.
The worst is when like pieces of the foam padding are like so worn that they're disintegrating off the machine.
Oh yeah, that's nasty.
And I'll put a towel over it.
Yeah, it's funny. Like we bought an elliptical machine, used, and it's been great. It was a super discount, and we have it, and we brought it with us when we came down from San Francisco, and it's awesome. And Eileen uses it regularly, but she still likes to go to classes and stuff. Like there's just something about, for her, being in a group that is more motivating sometimes.
Yeah, I can't go to a gym and work out by myself. I have no motivation to do so. But if I make a date with one of my lady friends and I'm like, we're going here together, then I'll do it.
It's that motivation.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to put somebody down. I can put myself down all the time, sure. But
Do you guys scream at each other as motivation? Come on!
Yeah.
One more!
Basically, yeah.
If you fail now...
This is going to be your first time, but I'm totally like that, though.
I'm like a Marine Corps drill instructor. Fail at this, you'll fail at everything in life. Now push!
I think I'd be pretty good at that. I did grow up on bases, so...
Uh-huh. So it's just natural. Second nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. I Sawyer is my motivation. I go running with him.
Oh, that's cool.
So I know he like really enjoys it, and it's important for him to get outside and see the world. Well, not the world, at least, but our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Oh no, Biocast said he just finished an Audible book the other day, and instead of the garbled voice that you normally get at the end, the reader, the narrator, actually said the Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Oh wow.
And Biocast like, I was disappointed. Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program. I wonder if that'll happen on Pilot X. Maybe I can request, like, please use the garbled tag. My audience demands it.
When are you coming out with the audiobook?
March 14th.
Awesome. Nice.
Yeah, you can pre-order it now.
That's so exciting.
Are you reading it?
Nope. They got a pro. He's done a bunch of David Weber books and Bruce Catton books. And, yeah.
That's awesome. Off to get it when it comes out because I am a slow reader.
Yeah, you can 2X it. Be done.
We go.
I'm actually curious how many hours it's going to end up being. I'm going to guess it's like around 8 or 8 to 10. I don't think it'll be super long.
That's good. That's a good length for books.
Yeah.
If it ends up being like 56 hours, like Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah, like Great North Road. Oh my, that took me months.
Jason says hi.
Hi, Jason.
He says hi, Jason. It's my coworker. He was hiding behind this thing.
The whole time?
Yeah, the whole time.
How
for real, the whole time. He was just crouched down behind it, waiting for us to stop.
Yeah. <That's> funny. Almost exported. Almost there. I have to go do a Twin Peaks podcast, and I had a panic this morning because for some reason... I got behind and I thought I had watched the episode we're talking about and I hadn't. So I took really, really spare notes. I'm just going to have to rely on Ron for this one. I'm not going to tell you which episode it is. So if you're listening to Damn Fine Podcast, try to guess which one I wasn't properly prepared for. Maybe I'll just say it on the show.
Oh, hey, Chat Realm. I'm looking for a spreadsheet that I can plug in all of my like tax data into throughout the year and it'll tell me how much I owe at the end of the year because I'm self-employed. So, well, yeah, but you know, Google spreadsheets are free. So if there's like a spreadsheet that's already been made by somebody that has all the math involved for a regular, you know, IRS reporting.
Yeah.
I don't know if that exists. If it doesn't, I'll make my own. It'll take me a long time, but I'll make my own. But yeah, I'm trying to look for something that can just calculate everything if I plug in all the numbers.
Just so you have an idea, like an estimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I spent this much on all my expenses for the year for my Schedule C. And then I put this much into retirement. So tell me how much I owe at the end of the year. So if anybody knows, you can send it to me at Snubs on Twitter.
Don't forget all those charitable donations.
Yes. Which I don't think I donate enough to go over the standard deduction because I can't afford it.
Yeah.
But I wish I could. I wish I could just donate to everybody. Not for the tax benefit, but just
to help.
Just to do it. Yeah. It's such a turnoff. Like if it doesn't go over your standard deduction, nobody's going to give. Like it should be counted as something separate so that everybody is
give
more
to help the cause.
Yeah, which I do. Like last year I gave to a bunch of causes and like even GoFundMe's that.
But yeah, the motivation.
Which you can't claim.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like the motivation's not there for a lot of people unless you're like super rich to give to charities. But I still do.
You can deduct professional memberships too.
Oh yeah, I do that. Yeah. My professional membership to Amazon Prime.
We should start a professional society so that we can use it as a tax shelter.
Okay, I'm down. For real. If you want to do that.
The Society of Professional Podcasters.
Just put that loophole in there.
Yeah. Sometimes I think that's why a lot of these societies got started, right?
I think you're right. Yeah. I found some good spreadsheets on the internets, some Google Docs spreadsheets that help you calculate stuff. But most of them are for like, this is where you can plug in all of your expenses for your business. But they don't do the calculation for like after your net amount, this is how much you owe after AGI. And that's what I want to figure out. But it's so hard to figure out. Though I did find a tax accountant for this year, so I'm not panicking about that. So that's good.
Good. Okay, so the past 2 days, I have accidentally put the Daily Tech Headlines link in the post.
Oops.
I've even got some people like, so why did you change the policy to put all the episodes? And I'm like, I didn't, just accidental. So right now, I'm copying the link. It is the proper link that says ICVV, what you did there, in the URL. And I'm putting that in the href around MP3. Pretty sure I'm not screwing it up today. Pretty sure. Publishing now. Wish me luck. People are like, hey, so what happened? And I'm like, I screwed it up 2 days in a row. That's what happened. One guy was really nice. He's like, I'm not criticizing you. I just want to make, like, do you need help? Is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, man. I just, you know, we all have those days. All right. We are done. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Have a good afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow with Chris Ashley and Len Peralta.